Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, with the latest updates on the COVID-19 coronavirus crisis. As of Monday night, when we're taping this show, more than 168,000 cases have been confirmed worldwide in 158 countries and territories, causing over 6,600 deaths. According to the World Health Organization, in the U.S., 1,678 cases have been confirmed as testing belatedly begins to ramp up, and 41 Americans have died. San Diego County has 55 cases confirmed. That's up from a sevenfold increase from just 4 days ago. Recent cases include a sailor aboard the USS Boxer, a Chula Vista City Councilman, a San Diego State student, nurses at UCSD Medical Center, cruise ship passengers quarantined at Miramar, an employee at a Spring Valley retirement home, a paramedic in Escondido, and more. Federal, state, and disasters have been declared. On Monday, the County of San Diego ordered all bars and nightclubs closed and limited restaurants to only takeout, delivery, or drive-through services through at least March 31st. All schools from kindergarten through colleges and universities have been ordered to stop teaching all classes on campus countywide. At some schools, including SDSU and UCSD, many classes have been moved online. All gatherings of 50 or more people are prohibited countywide, including private and public events, and smaller gatherings are strongly discouraged. Nationally, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, or CDC, is urging even stronger steps to contain the virus, including avoiding all gatherings of 10 or more people. Seniors over age 65 and those with underlying health conditions in San Diego County are urged to shelter in place at home. Hospitals are being asked to cancel elective surgeries locally to free up beds needed for the anticipated influx of patients. Most visitors to hospitals and nursing homes have been prohibited to limit exposure as health officials fight to flatten the curve of new cases while medical experts race against time to develop treatments and ultimately a vaccine, though the latter is still likely a long way away. Small businesses hurt by the coronavirus locally can apply to the Small Business Administration for low-interest loans. Workers who are laid off can apply for unemployment, but for many, that's not enough to stay afloat financially. Monday night, Governor Gavin Newsom announced a new executive order that allows counties to stop landlords from evicting tenants and asks that mortgages not be foreclosed on until at least May 31st, giving renters and homeowners more time to come up with rent and mortgage payments. Now, under the county's orders, businesses must allow workers to telecommute if feasible, and business owners cannot require workers to provide doctor's notes if they request time off for illness, quarantine at home, or leave, such as to care for children at home from school or an ill family member. All travelers arriving from foreign countries will be ordered to self-quarantine at home for 14 days if they traveled from or stopped over in nations listed on the Centers for Disease Control's Level 3 list, which currently includes China, Iran, South Korea, and nearly all European nations. Now, anybody who's sick with symptoms of COVID-19, such as fever, cough, or respiratory problems, are ordered to stay home until they receive medical care. President Trump has urged Americans not to travel on cruise ships at all, and many cruise lines have canceled cruises for the next month or two. Nationally, major events have been canceled, including St. Patrick's Day parades and major sporting events, including all NBA games, NCAA competitions, and Major League Baseball for at least the next couple of weeks. Disneyland, the San Diego Zoo, SeaWorld, and Legoland have all shut down during the crisis. Virtually all major local events have been canceled, including St. Patrick's Day events, Earth Day, Live Nation concerts, including the Magnolia and El Cajon, and more. Local city council meetings are also being canceled or held virtually online. criticism is mounting of President Donald Trump for leaving the CDC's pandemic team positions entirely vacant since 2018, ignoring warnings of top health experts. Even as the COVID-19 situation grew out of control in China, and nations across Europe and around the world began shutting down completely, including Denmark and Italy, and France and Spain, Trump initially called concerns over the new virus a hoax perpetrated by Democrats. His administration failed to provide adequate amounts of testing kits to states such as California, and now he is telling states to order their own ventilators, life-saving equipment that's now in very short supply as the number of cases grows exponentially. During the Democratic debate over the weekend, both former President Joe Biden and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders laid out their own plans to stem the pandemic, with Sanders also emphasizing the need for Medicare for All long-term. Both leveled sharp criticism of the Trump administration for its failure in leadership. Trump has said he would sign an emergency coronavirus measure passed by House Democrats that would include relief for some impacted workers, among other measures. But so far, Republican senators have stalled the measure while the death toll across the nation continues to mount and the situation grows grimmer. In Seattle, medical experts predict deaths could number in the thousands, a situation that could potentially also occur in San Diego, as well, if the number of cases continues on its present growth curve here, experts warn. San Francisco, where residents live in densely packed urban neighborhoods, all residents have been ordered to shelter in place there until further notice. And many big cities across the country, including New York, Ohio, other places, Chicago, are taking drastic measures as well, such as asking people to stay off of public transportation and shutting down restaurants, bars, and more. Across the nation, store shelves have been left bare by residents stocking up for sheltering at home and, in some cases, hoarding. Locally, some stores are now rationing purchases of toilet paper and other necessities. Barron's Markets locally have announced plans to allow a half hour from 9 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. for seniors when stores first open and have been deep cleaned overnight. And listeners, please, please check up on your elderly and shut-in and disabled neighbors to make sure they're all right and find out if they may need any help running errands or getting supplies that they need. And if you're sick, please stay home and listen to health officials. Continue monitoring the situation here on KNSJ, which will have quarantine news all day long. And you can also find information on eastcountymagazine.org on the latest impacts countywide and especially those affecting East County. We'll have additional news later on in the show, including information on some help available to renters, homeowners, and businesses during the coronavirus crisis. Information on a major drug cartel broken up by the DEA. An important storm warning for today with snow forecast for our mountain areas. And with Women's History Month coming up, we'll be replaying Sounds of History, our profile on Helen Stoddard, a suffragist in East County who fought to get women the right to vote. We'll tell you about the sale of Sunbelt Publications, and we'll be replaying our interview with Diana Lindsay, the co-founder of Sunbelt and a prominent author in her own right. Finally, we'll have some information for you on a wildfire relief bill in the state legislature. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show, where East County matters.
After health authorities urged the public to stock up on supplies in case people need to self-quarantine due to the COVID-19 virus, many local shoppers have had difficulty buying necessities. At Costco in La Mesa, for example, buyers hoarding toilet paper quickly emptied store shelves. Our editor visited 7 stores seeking to buy hand sanitizers, but all outlets were sold out. Even major online retailers were sold out, but some individuals were trying to sell hand sanitizers on eBay or other sites for as much as $150. Now, San Diego District Attorney Summer Steffen has issued a warning to businesses and scammers. Don't try to take advantage of consumers by price gouging. During a declared state of emergency, it is illegal for a business to increase its prices for essential goods or services by more than 10%, unless they can show that their own costs have been increased. Both the state of California and the county of San Diego have declared emergencies over COVID-19. Steve Walker, communications specialist at the DA's office, says the statute could be applied not only to brick-and-mortar stores, but also to online retailers and to individuals trying to resell items at inflated prices. DA Summer Steffen says, "We want county residents to know that we stand ready to protect their consumer rights under the law," adding, "We will strictly enforce violations related to price gouging. Violators of the price gouging statute are subject to criminal prosecution that can result in 1 year imprisonment in county jail and or a fine of up to $10,000. They are also subject to civil penalties of up to $5,000 per violation, as well as injunctive relief and mandatory restitution. The law applies to certain products and necessities, including food and drink, for people and for animals, emergency supplies such as water, flashlights, radios, batteries, blankets, soaps, diapers, and toiletries such as toilet paper and hand sanitizers, as well as medical supplies such as prescription and non-prescription medications, bandages, gauze, alcohol, and antibacterial products. It is also a misdemeanor for a hotel or motel to raise rates by more than 10% during a declared emergency and for the 30 days afterwards. In addition to price gouging, consumers should be on the alert for criminals who may set up fake websites, send emails, texts, or post on social media pretending to be from the World Health Organization or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in an attempt to profit illegally. Also, be wary of business claiming to have a miracle cure or prevention. There is no cure yet for COVID-19, the new form of coronavirus first identified in China in December of last year. The DA also urges consumers not to respond to anyone claiming to have a vaccination or a cure. You can report suspected price gouging or other illegal actions to the District Attorney's Consumer Protection Unit at 619-531-3507 or to the California Attorney General's office. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for March 17, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. President Trump on Monday acknowledged the gravity of the coronavirus pandemic, releasing strict new guidelines to limit people's interactions in an increasingly urgent bid to slow the virus in the next 2 weeks before U.S. hospitals are overwhelmed. That from Politico. They quote, "Trump is saying we have an invisible enemy. This is a bad one. This is a very bad one." Trump released guidelines that call for people to avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people, steer clear of eating and drinking at bars, restaurants, and food courts, and work or attend school from home whenever possible. CNBC reports Trump also said his administration may look at lockdowns for certain areas or hotspots in the nation, but he said he wasn't considering a full national lockdown. Meantime, Sacramento lawmakers are pressing for health care reforms they say will help combat COVID-19. Suzanne Potter reports for PNS.
The Health for All Coalition announced their legislative priorities for 2020 on Monday, designed to get more people covered and cut costs for patients. State Senator Richard Pan, who is also a pediatrician, says Senate Bill 65 would cap health insurance premiums and copays at a percentage of people's income.
We need to provide some limits on cost sharing so that people don't just have coverage, but they can actually afford to get the care.
Another bill would have the state of California start manufacturing generic drugs so no company could gouge customers.
The Health for All Coalition also supports a bill to establish a state office of health care affordability and one to raise the assets limit for seniors so they don't lose access to Medi-Cal for having small amounts of savings. And as the coronavirus outbreak does get worse, Maryland reopened its health insurance exchange to boost coverage and expand treatment for the uninsured. Diane Bernard reports the state joins Washington and Massachusetts in offering a special sign-up period while the pandemic continues.
During this crisis, it's essential that all uninsured people get coverage, says Stephanie Clapper with Maryland Healthcare for All. She points out that a lot of folks without health insurance end up getting treated in emergency rooms, which could create chaos in the middle of a pandemic.
It's the most expensive place to get healthcare, but also in a public health crisis like this, the emergency rooms could be overwhelmed by too many people needing healthcare at the same time.
As of Monday, Maryland announced the number of confirmed cases was up to 37. Sign up for the state's health exchange is available until April 15th.
Meantime, Congress has been urging Health and Human Services to deal with this public health crisis by opening enrollment for the 38 states that rely on federal exchange, but there's no action taken so far. This is PNS. Tennessee lawmakers considering a bill that would have removed physician oversight requirements for the state's advanced practicing registered nurses. Terry Giraldi is with the Tennessee Nurses Association.
In Tennessee, we're ranked 44th in the country in health outcomes. We have to do something different in order to get access to patients who need it. And this is one way to do that.
The Tennessee Medical Association opposes the legislation, arguing existing laws provide a necessary framework for physicians, nurses, and other healthcare providers. A proposed flavored tobacco ban for Minnesota has seen movement in that state's legislature. Mike Mullen reporting, lawmakers have been shifting their focus toward the coronavirus threat, but supporters of the ban hope it regains momentum when normal schedules return.
The measure would prohibit the sale of all flavored tobacco products, including menthol cigarettes. Latricia Vita of North Point Health and Wellness says finally seeing policy that addresses menthol sales hits home for her, given the impact such products have had on her family.
There's been a lot of premature deaths. There's been a lot of illness related to tobacco, and it's still happening in my very own family.
Tobacco companies have been accused of preying on communities of color with menthol products. Supporters of the ban say it also would curb teen use of vaping liquids. Opponents say it would push them to use regular tobacco while expanding the market for unregulated products. The ban has been advancing through House committees, but has seen little action in the Senate.
And finally, Eric Galatis reports Native Americans living in traditional villages and on reservations were the most undercounted group in the last U.S. Census.
And tribal leaders in Colorado are encouraging all residents across racial and ethnic lines to participate. Rick Waters is a Kiowa Cherokee with the Denver Indian Center. He says as populations grow throughout Indian country, it's important to get an accurate count of Native Americans, both self-identified and those enrolled within their tribes.
The census is important to the Indian community primarily because it gives us an opportunity to actually show our numbers that we are here and break down that invisibility.
The biggest barrier to getting an accurate count is fear of the federal government. Historically, government counts have been used to remove Native American children from families into boarding schools and force people off their lands. All data collected in the census is confidential by law, and anyone breaking that law can be sentenced to 5 years in prison and receive a fine of up to $250,000. An undercount can lead to unequal political representation and unequal access to vital public and private resources.
Invitations to participate in the 2020 census are going out by mail this month, and there is a new push to get folks to fill out their forms online. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are member and listener supported and online at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego Gas and Electric Company, or SDG&E, has announced that it is suspending disconnections of service for non-payment of bills. A statement on the utility company's website states that the temporary suspension on service cutoffs is due to the coronavirus pandemic causing significant impact on the economy and people's livelihoods. The company also urges customers struggling to pay their utility bill due to financial hardships stemming from the coronavirus to call SDG&E's customer contact center at 1-800-411-7343 to make payment arrangements. Scott Sider, SDG&E's Vice President of Customer Service, says, "With our entire region already experiencing many disruptions due to the coronavirus, the last thing we want our customers to worry about is whether they can afford to keep their lights on." Reporting on KNSJ for East County Magazine, this is Liz Alper.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 election process.
There is only one thing in my mind more important than a free and fair election, and that is the health and safety of our fellow Ohioans.
Ohio Secretary of State Frank LaRose, speaking earlier in the day before Governor Mike DeWine, declared a public health emergency over the new coronavirus, and Health Department Director Amy Acton ordered today's polls closed. LaRose said they didn't make their decision lightly.
We can't stand here and tell people over 65 that they should stay at home and at the same time tell Ohioans that they should come out to vote.
The shutdown overrules an earlier court decision not to delay by Franklin County Judge Richard Fry, who said it was too late to take the decision away from state legislators and that pushing it back might disenfranchise some voters. The decision came just hours after President Donald Trump issued new guidelines restricting gatherings of more than 10 people and warned the crisis may continue into the summer months. On the news, stock markets plummeted despite the circuit breakers meant to calm trading. Today, Illinois, Florida, and Arizona also go to the polls. Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker endorsed former Vice President Joe Biden yesterday. Election officials in all four states are publicizing health precautions. Arizona's Secretary of State Katie Hobbs says they're using the guidance of public health officials and the Centers for Disease Control,
including social distancing measures, regular intervals for poll workers to wash their hands, and guidance on how to properly and frequently sanitize election equipment and common surfaces. But we need your help too. We're asking all voters to sanitize or wash their hands for 20 seconds both before and after leaving the polls.
Arizona and Florida both have large elderly populations. Around 20% of Florida voters are 65 and up, and some of the most vulnerable to COVID-19. The Sunshine State also has the 11th highest incarceration rate in the country. This is the first major election since a 2018 ballot measure threw out the lifetime ban on voting for anyone with a past felony conviction.
I don't think you can overstate the importance of the largest enfranchisement of a group of voters sort of in the history of the state, certainly, and of the country.
But attorney Kira Romero-Kraft with Latino Justice says the 1.4 million people whose rights were just restored could still be disenfranchised. The Republican-controlled Florida legislature passed a law requiring former felons to pay all court costs and fees before registering to vote. The ACLU is one group challenging the law. Voting Rights Project senior staff attorney Julie Ebenstein says it's unfortunate
that Florida hasn't done more to resolve that issue and to give people very clear guidance in time for the election.
In Washington state, Biden was finally declared the winner. Kentucky joined Georgia and Louisiana in delaying its primary. The U.S. Supreme Court postponed oral arguments for several weeks, including whether the president may shield his tax returns. And Utah Senator Mitt Romney took a page out of former presidential candidate Andrew Yang's book, proposing $1,000 a month for every American during this pandemic. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a business report. Despite the federal government dropping interest rates to zero in an effort to stave off economic disaster amid worsening coronavirus news, after President Trump's speech on Monday, the stock market plummeted even lower. The Dow Jones fell by nearly 3,000 points on Monday, the worst drop in history. The Standard & Poor's Index fell 12%, its worst day since Black Monday in October 1987, and the NASDAQ Composite ended the day down over 12%. Those falls come after earlier plunges in recent weeks since the COVID-19 crisis deepened into what the World Health Organization on Thursday declared a global pandemic.
Major water districts, including Helix, Otay, and Padre Dam, have issued statements to assure customers that tap water is safe to drink during the COVID-19 crisis. According to Helix Water, the district's disinfection process includes ozone to chemically deactivate and remove viruses, including the COVID-19 coronavirus. A news release from the district says it analyzes 200 water samples daily to make sure that treatments are working and water is safe to drink. There is no evidence that coronavirus can be transmitted through water. Like the flu, coronavirus is a respiratory illness that is airborne. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alper.
To help contain spread of the COVID-19 virus and assure uninterrupted emergency response services effective immediately, non-emergency access by the public is halted at all CAL FIRE and County Fire Authority fire stations in the unincorporated region of San Diego County. A press release issued by the agency today dates. This move does not impact our ability to respond to requests for assistance from residents within our protection areas or our local cooperators. We encourage the public to continue to utilize the 911 system should they have an emergency that requires our response. Now, until further notice, the following non-emergency services will not be available to the public at any CAL FIRE or San Diego County Fire Authority fire stations: station tours, public events, and burn permit services. CAL FIRE Captain and Public Information Officer Isaac Sanchez told us that this means anyone who does not currently have a valid burn permit in hand will be unable to have one issued. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The Anti-Defamation League has presented the Helen and Joseph Sherwood Prize for Combating Hate to several local law enforcement agencies for their responses to the Shabbat of Poway shooting. The award recognizes law enforcement efforts to fight hate and bigotry. It is considered one of the most prestigious awards given to the law enforcement community. On April 28, 2019, a man opened fire inside the Shabbat of Poway, killing one person and wounding three others. Within minutes, deputies from the San Diego Sheriff's Station in Poway and officers from other stations arrived to secure the scene and help victims. The award also honored the San Diego Police Department, Poway Fire Department, the City of Poway, and the FBI's San Diego Field Office for their responses to the crisis. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Crime Beat report. The U.S. Justice Department and the Drug Enforcement Administration have announced results of Project Python, a DEA-led interagency operation targeting the Cartel de Jalisco Nueva Generación, or CJNG. The six-month investigation has resulted in over 500 cartel associates arrested nationwide and 350 indictments, as well as major seizures of drugs, guns, and cash. San Diego and Imperial County's DEA investigations related to Project Python have resulted in arrest of over 130 cartel associates locally, as well as seizure of about 3,200 pounds of methamphetamine, 59 kilograms of heroin, 198 kilograms of cocaine, 44 kilograms of fentanyl, 2 kilograms of opium, over 27,000 fentanyl pills, and 18 firearms. Special Agent in Charge John Callery says the Cartel de Jalisco Nueva Generación has exploited children in the San Diego and border area to smuggle deadly drugs into the U.S. He adds that the DEA will continue to attack these, quote, callous and immoral criminals from top to bottom until they no longer exist. Acting DEA Administrator Utam Dhillon says Project Python is the single largest strike by U.S. authorities against CJNG, and this is just the beginning. The action was part of fulfilling a presidential executive order to identify, disrupt, and dismantle transnational criminal organizations. The cartel targeted is one of the fastest-growing transnational criminal organizations in Mexico and among the most prolific methamphetamine producers in the world, according to the DEA. It is also responsible for a significant proportion of drugs entering the U.S. and elevated levels of violence in Mexico. Criminal indictments filed include charges against Nemesio Ruben Oseguero Cervantes, also known as El Mencho, whom the DEA indicates is the leader of the cartel, although he remains at large. Last month, El Mencho's son, known as El Menchito, second in command of the cartel, was extradited from Mexico to the U.S. on charges of alleged drug trafficking and illegal firearm use. On February 26th, El Mencho's daughter was arrested in the U.S. on criminal financial charges. The U.S. Department of Treasury has designated El Mencho as a specially designated narcotics trafficker under the Foreign Narcotics Kingpin Designation Act, and the U.S. Department of State has issued one of the largest narcotics rewards ever, $10 million for information leading to the arrest of El Mencho.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
This is Miriam Raftery with a storm warning for our region. The National Weather Service is warning residents to be ready for a snowstorm today in San Diego County's mountains. Snow is expected to fall above 5,000 feet in areas such as Mount Laguna and Palomar Mountain. Snow accumulation of 3 inches is forecast, with more possible in some localized areas. Southwest winds with gusts up to 35 miles an hour will add to hazardous driving conditions, so please avoid these areas if possible, listeners, and if you must drive in the mountains, be sure to carry chains and be prepared for snow-covered roads and limited visibility.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history.
This is Miriam Raftery, guest hosting the Sounds of History on the East County Magazine show. April is Women's History Month. It's an appropriate time to share a story about a remarkable woman from East County's past. Helen Stoddard, a former resident of La Mesa, Lemon Grove, and Ramona, was a prominent leader in the fight to win women the right to vote, as well as in the temperance movement. She even earned a place in history at the national political level. Born in 1850 in Wisconsin, Stoddard earned a teaching degree at Genesee Wesleyan Seminary in New York, graduating as valedictorian in 1873. She married Shepherd Stoddard and had 2 sons, one of whom died in infancy. They lived briefly in Nebraska, but soon her husband's health was failing, so the family moved to Florida. And after he died in 1875, when Helen Stoddard was just 25 years old, she and her surviving young son moved to Texas to be near her parents. There, she became president of the Texas State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, concerned over the negative impacts of alcoholism on women and their families. She also served on the faculty of Fort Worth University and helped establish a women's industrial arts college that today is known as Texas Women's University, where 2 buildings were named after her. She became an activist, lobbying successfully for a pure food law and laws against cocaine, gambling, child labor, raising the age of protection for girls from 12 to 15 in Texas, and more. She spent 3 months in Mexico as an organizer and twice served as a delegate to world conventions of the Women's Christian Temperance Union. She also wrote an article on the Texas suffrage movement for Susan B. Anthony's book, History of Woman Suffrage. In 1910, Helen Stoddard and her son moved to La Mesa, where she was soon elected president of the La Mesa Women's Club, which incidentally was founded in 1902 and is the city's oldest active service club today. She also headed up the local chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Society, forerunner of the Prohibition movement. Local women embarked on barnstorming tours across the county to win support from men for women to gain the right to vote in California. La Mesa's newspaper and other local papers editorialized in favor of granting this right, since progressives in the region recognized that women would be key allies in local political issues and supporting social reforms related to child labor, public health, and regulating alcohol and vice. La Mesa Scout editorialized that the right of women to vote is as absolute as that of a man. In October 1911, California's legislature amended the state constitution, granting women the right to vote. Days later, Helen Stoddard loaded up motor cars with about 40 members of the La Mesa Women's Club and headed to the Registrar of Voters office in downtown San Diego, registering them all to vote. In La Mesa, then known as La Mesa Springs, a battle was brewing over incorporation to become a city. Supporters wanted the city to control its own water supply and support public education, among other goals. But there was strong opposition, mainly from ranchers who feared that their taxes would go up. Early efforts at incorporation faltered until the women got involved and won the right to vote. A meeting at the La Mesa Opera House on December 1, 1911, ended in disorder without a vote on whether to incorporate after vocal opponents showed up. Supporters brought their case to the supervisors, and among the speakers arguing to the supervisors was suffrage leader Helen Stoddard. The district attorney reviewed the petition, but rejected it at first for not meeting requirements to publish notices 3 times over 2 weeks. So the supporters circulated a new petition and adjusted boundaries to remove some of their key opponents. In February 1912, a new meeting was convened at the city's Opera House, a building that today is the Porfavor Restaurant in downtown La Mesa. Citizens nominated candidates for public office in case the incorporation petition passed, and Helen Stoddard was nominated to serve, but she declined. Turned out she had higher ambitions, and we'll tell you about that in a minute. On February 7, 1912, a special election was held, and the incorporation measure passed with help from La Mesa's newly registered women. Soon after, Stoddard declared her intention to run for Congress on the Prohibition Party ticket. She was the first woman in California to seek national office. Her campaign targeted women with the slogan, "A vote for Helen Stoddard is a vote for the home." She didn't win, but she did draw over 1,300 votes out of over 20,000 cast for five candidates in the race. A year later, she and her son Robert and his wife moved to Lemon Grove, where they spent the next 10 years. And in 1923, they moved to Ramona, where her son raised turkeys and chickens, while his mother continued her work in the temperance movement from their home overlooking the Ramona High School. In 1920, Helen Stoddard was elected president of the California State Chapter of the Women's Christian Temperance Union, and she served as a California delegate to the Congress Against Alcoholism in Washington, D.C. After her son's death in 1936 in Ramona, Stoddard and her daughter-in-law moved to Texas. Helen Stoddard died there in January 1941 at age 90, and her body was returned to San Diego for burial next to her son at Greenwood Memorial Park. She had lived through the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World War I, and the dawn of World War II. Born in the pioneer era, in her lifetime she advanced education of women and saw women win the right to vote, helped lead the successful fight for La Mesa to become a city, ran for national political office, fought for the passage of the Prohibition Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, but also lived to see that repealed. Throughout her life, she was a tireless fighter for the rights of women and girls, touching the lives of people across our nation to this day.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. Sunbelt Publications, known for its award-winning books about natural and cultural history, outdoor adventure, regional references, and travel, has been sold to American Traveler Press of Phoenix, Arizona. Sunbelt will be closing its El Cajon warehouse on Fayette Street on March 31st and moving all stock to Arizona starting April 1st. We're certainly going to miss Sunbelt, and we thought this would be a good time to replay our interview with Diana Lindsay, the co-founder of Sunbelt Publications.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Diana Lindsay. My guest is president of Sunbelt Publications and leading editor of the book Coast to Cactus, The Canyoneer Trail Guide to San Diego Outdoors. Coast to Cactus, which was published by Sunbelt in partnership with the San Diego Natural History Museum, contains 245 outings and 73 extension hikes. Welcome, Diana. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Let's start with the book. I know that it's based on the weekly Romo-Rama column for the San Diego Reader, and it's the field guide to the Natural History Museum's exhibition, Coast to Cactus, Southern California. But summarize, if you will, what readers will find in Coast to Cactus that they may not find elsewhere. How is it unique?
Well, first of all, it's more than a hiking guide. It is also a field guide. So unlike having to take your hiking guide out into an area that you want to explore along with many trail guides for flowers, for birds, for amphibians or reptiles, you can just take this one book, because what it does do is function as a field guide. There's 525 different species that are found in San Diego County that are featured, that have photos in them, that have full descriptions. So this is just the one book that you need to be able to study and learn about the county as you're hiking on a trail.
So that makes it much more practical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's such a wonderfully colorful book.
Yeah, it has 665 color photos in it. It has 258 maps. It also features the habitats that you will find within the county. We're using the system that San Diego State University has on 9 different habitats that are found in San Diego County. And each of the maps has a symbol by it telling you what habitat you will encounter on that hike. So in some hikes, for instance, you may just have a chaparral or a riparian mm-hmm. area. So there'll be the symbols for those two habitats next to the map, and you'll know you will encounter that on the hike. But another hike may have five or six different types of habitats that you will encounter as you are on the trail. So we're trying to teach people to become aware of when they hike, you know, what types of habitats they actually will encounter on those hikes.
That's wonderful. And can you also explain the map in the beginning of the book with the chapters for depending on which region?
We have a map in the front of the book, and we decided not to use a grid system that many hiking books do use. We wanted to make it easier for the reader so we have broken up the chapters according to logical areas that are geographical boundaries by freeways. So you can look at an area that's encompassed by, let's say, Interstate mm-hmm. 15 or 5 and cross freeways that go, and you can go into that chapter and you will mm-hmm. find all the hikes that are within that area. We have the overall breakdown of the book broken into the coastal hikes, the inland hikes, mm-hmm. Which are the foothills. We have the mountain hikes and the desert hikes. So those are the four regions that we cover within the book. And then within each of those regions, we break it down into geographical areas to make it easier for people to find those particular places that they want to explore.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So much to discover.
Yes.
Now, I understand that your company envisioned a hiking guide to the county, but then Jerry Schad's A Foot in a Field was published by Wilderness Press in 1986. How did that desire lead you to the production of Costa Cactus?
Well, my husband and I wrote the guidebook for the Anza-Borrego Desert region in 1978, and then we had thought beyond that, thinking that what was really needed was a guide to the entire county. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Jerry had been working on the county guide, and he came out with his book. It's a very excellent book. And so that kind of put our desires to do a county book on a shelf, but always we had that in the back of our minds. You know, if we were going to do a book, how could we do it that would be different than what Jerry did that people would be interested in? And at the time, you know, we wanted to learn more about the county and the things that we could see on the trail. And that's when we joined the San Diego Natural History Museum and became canyoneers almost 30 years ago. And to learn about the species and the plants and the habitats that are found on trails. And from that experience, the idea evolved that, well, what if we took this experiences of knowing the species and the habitats and actually integrated it within a guidebook, would that be something that people would be interested in? And would it actually lead to really learning about the county and helping to understand what is actually found in our county?
How long did it take to put this together? It sounds like an enormous project.
Well, we introduced I introduced the idea of working on a book such as this about a decade ago, and it seemed like an overwhelming project. So it kind of sat on a back shelf for many, many years, mm-hmm. and actually what happened, Jerry unfortunately had passed away, and I was at his memorial service, and the publisher of the San Diego Reader, Jim Holman, had said that they were looking for somebody to take over the Roma-Rama column, which Jerry had written very wonderful columns throughout the years.
Right.
So I went back to the Canyoneers and I said, you know, we have an opportunity here to actually do this book, and it would be more manageable because all we would have to do is do one article a week until we had enough articles to put it together in a book. And so that's when we made an agreement with my publishing house, the mm-hmm. San Diego Natural History Museum, and the Canyoneers to work on this, and then we began the columns, a weekly column for the San Diego Reader. After several years, we had enough to do a book, and then the real work began. So then
right.
It was about 18 months, 2 years, to then basically strip all of the descriptions, pull it back, check all the descriptions for the trails to make sure they're accurate, and then to reinsert the descriptions, but not repeating them, only doing one particular detailed description in the book for every species that we wanted to cover. The difficulty here was to make sure that when we did put a species description in, that it was actually found on that trail and that the description was accurate. So we had to have all the curators with their specialties specialties check everything we wrote. We had to work with all of the agencies where the trails were found and then run the trail descriptions by them to make sure they were accurate. They checked our trails. And so we made sure that not only were the species descriptions correct, that the habitats mm-hmm. that we said were there were correct, but that all of the information regarding those species were correct. And then, and so that was a long project. Yeah, we had two other editors besides myself that worked very closely together. So we made sure that all the descriptions were accurate and then we went back and forth and double checked everything.
It really sounds like a labor of love.
Well, actually, it was a labor of love because unlike most books where an author has the royalty and they make money from this book, everybody that worked on this book, all the canyoneers, and there's over 50 people who made contributions to the Roma-Rama articles that we used, and the editors, myself and Paula Noel and Terry Barnell, all of us are volunteers at the San Diego Natural History Museum. So all our work was as a volunteer for the museum, and all the proceeds from the book that a normal author would receive are going to the museum. So when anybody buys Wonderful. This book, they're actually supporting the San Diego Natural History Museum.
That's nice to know. Talk a little bit more about the Canyoneers and this exhibit at the museum.
Yes, the Canyoneers are it's a program at the museum that's over 40 years old, and it was started by a botanist, Helen Shamley, at the museum. There was a canyon next to the museum, still there, mm-hmm. a Florida canyon, which was very lovely canyon. And several years later, after the Canyoneers began, it actually, there was a fire there, and that's what resulted in the Canyoneers actually moving out into the county. But the original idea was to have docents that were trained by the museum curators to take the public into the Florida Canyon. They were called the Florida Canyoneers, and to teach people what was in there and the value of that particular habitat. After the fire occurred, the habitat was not as pristine as it once was, so that's when the Canyoneers began to expand to do walks throughout the whole county, which we do now. We do offer free public walks every single weekend, and that is between September and June. You can find the free public walks by going onto the website for the San Diego Natural History Museum or picking up a brochure. No reservations required. Just show up. We break up into small groups. And the whole idea of a canyoneer walk is not to hurry up to get there and hurry up to get back. It's to walk slowly, to look around, to investigate, to smell, to see right. what the interaction is in the habitat with the surrounding plants and species.
So to engage all your senses.
Absolutely. And you asked about the connection to the exhibition, the Costa Cactus Southern California. That exhibition was created to basically get the county and the folks in the county to be aware of the habitats that are found here in the county. But more important than that, to understand that San Diego is a biological hot zone. It's a biodiversity hot zone. There are 32 places in the world that are hotspots, and to be a hotspot means that you have incredible diversity in an area, but you have threatened species or species that have disappeared. And because of that, you want to keep an eye and watch these areas very carefully. And because San Diego is a hotspot, we want people to be aware of what is out here. We want them to become more conscious of conservation for this area. And so that was part of what the exhibit is all about. So you can go to the exhibit, you can learn about the habitats, learn why San Diego is a hotspot, and then you can take the field guide, which is actually a complement to this exhibition, and this is your field guide to get into the field to actually see what's out there. So it complements the exhibition. One mm-hmm. is an actual museum experience, the other one is a field experience.
And do you think this will help conservation efforts?
We certainly hope so. It's, you know, the museum and also my publication house believe very strongly in what a Senegalese conservationist, Baba Douim, has said. And what he has said is, in the end, we will conserve only what we love. We will love only what we understand. And we will understand only what we are taught. And so that's what the exhibition is about. That's what this book is about. It's about teaching folks in San Diego County what is special about this county. And once you learn and get excited about it, you're going to have a personal feeling for it, and you're going mm-hmm. to want to protect it and lead to taking care of these special areas, which as our county grows and more people move into it, we want to make sure these particular areas are protected.
Wonderful. I can't wait to dig into this book. One last question. What is your favorite trail?
Well, I'm known as a desert person, so obviously my favorite trails are all in the Anza-Brego Desert State Park area. And those trails kind of vary for me depending on my moods. If I want a kind of a closed-in experience, I like to go into the slot canyons. Those are kind of fun because they're magical, especially with the light changes. If I want to have spectacular views, I might want to go up on Whale Peak and kind of take a look at the views around there. Split Mountain is always great for geology. Coyote Canyon is wonderful because it has the longest running stream in San Diego County. It always has water. Mountain Palm Canyon is wonderful. Mountain Palm Springs, rather. It has just wonderful palm trees that are in there. And then plus if you go up to Torote Bowl, there's the very rare elephant tree and a spectacular view of the Vallecito Badlands. So there's many special places in the Anza-Brego Desert. Fonce Point, a lot of people like to go out there and take a look at that spectacular view, especially at sunset as you look out over the Borrego Badlands. But it's a very special place. So for me, I'm happy almost anywhere in the desert.
And have you always been a desert person?
Well, not really. It's interesting that you should ask that because this happens to be my 50th anniversary of my introduction to Anza-Brego State Park. I had actually met my husband at a mountaineering club at UCLA when we always went backpacking the Sierras. And when he became a helicopter pilot with the Navy, we were stationed in San Diego. And he would fly over the desert on training missions and said, "Hey, we need to go out and check out that place." And I said, "Come on, get real. This is a desert. There's nothing there. That's right. Why it's a desert." And so we had a few arguments back and forth because he would say, "Come on, we really need to check it out." And I finally said, "Look, if I go one time out there, would you just quit bugging me?" So we went. I had a fantastic experience. It was spring. It was Painted Gorge out on Coyote Mountains. The following week, he said, "Okay, let's go to the Sierras." And I said, "Can we go back to the desert?" And I've been going ever since. My master's thesis was done on it, and several books have been done on the desert. And I always am anxious to get back to the desert.
Well, thank you for sharing your story.
You're welcome.
Our time is up, but it's been wonderful talking to you, Diana.
Oh, thank you very much for inviting me.
For more information on Coast to Cactus, please visit sunbeltpublications.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Homeowners across California are facing a crisis with insurance companies refusing to renew policies due to wildfire concerns. In 2018 alone, the rate of non-renewals rose 10% in 6 California counties, including San Diego County. Some home buyers have also found themselves unable to get fire insurance coverage. But legislative relief may be coming soon for many impacted residents. A new bill, AB 2367, also called Renew California, has been introduced in the state legislature to help homeowners in high fire risk areas. San Diego Assemblywoman Lorena Gonzalez-Fletcher is an author of the bill, which is backed by the State Insurance Commissioner Ricardo Lara and by United Policyholders, a group advocating for impacted property owners. The bill would require insurance companies to write or renew policies for existing homes in communities that meet a new statewide standard for fire hardening. It would also authorize the insurance commissioner to require insurance companies to offer financial incentives for homeowners to make their homes more fire safe. The measure focuses on insurance companies that have been writing fewer homeowner policies in California and sharply increasing non-renewals of homes at risk of wildfire damage. Lack of insurance has sparked a wildfire domino effect that disrupts real estate markets and threatens the property tax base that local communities rely on to fund emergency services and more, according to the insurance commissioner. Fires have taken a destructive toll in recent years. The most recent data on insurance non-renewals does not even fully account for the impact of insurance drop due to some of the most catastrophic wildfires in California history that caused billions of dollars in losses in the last couple of years alone.
Assemblymember Gonzalez-Fletcher says homeowners who have done all the right things, hardening their homes and mitigating for fire danger, are still seeing their insurance canceled or non-renewed. We can't allow insurance companies to continue to drop responsible homeowners from San Diego to the Sierras just because they can. Creating the Wildfire Resilience Task Force will bring certainty to consumer homeowners and bring balance back to our insurance markets, she predicts. Under AB 2367, the insurance commissioner, the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and the state fire marshal will develop statewide standards for home and community hardening in consultation with CAL FIRE and the Governor's Office of Planning and Research. Hardened homes and communities that meet this standard would receive a guaranteed offer for renewal of insurance, contributing to community resilience while ending the cycle of lost home sales, falling prices, and declining property values that are negatively impacting communities across the state. Insurance Commissioner Lara says more Californians are hardening their homes against wildfires, but they're not seeing the results of their hard work when it comes time to obtain or renew insurance. If you have a fire-hardened home in a fire-hardened community, you should be able to get insurance and keep it, he says. This law would apply only to existing homes whose owners are facing an abrupt change in insurance availability related to wildfire risk. Commissioner Lara and Department of Insurance staff have met with over 2,000 residents and local leaders across 15 counties suffering from this increased lack of insurance. Many spoke about their frustration at losing insurance even after decades with the same company and no claims history. Meanwhile, an increasing number of homeowners are turning to the FAIR plan, California's insurer of last resort, which offers coverage, but is less comprehensive and often more expensive compared to traditional insurance. Amy Bach, executive director of United Policyholders, says 3 years ago when insurers started dropping homeowners in rural counties and hitting them with up to 500% price increases, United Policyholders issued a call for California to follow the lead of Florida, Alabama, and South Carolina and create a risk reduction and insurance reward program. Now, the program has spread throughout the state, and insurers won't come to the table voluntarily. So, she says, the legislature must act. Governor Gavin Newsom has said that we must do more to stop non-renewals. Many legislators are also calling for action. The governor has signed two other new laws to address the issue in part, including one which protected nearly 1 million households near recent wildfire areas from non-renewal for a year, and another law which increased time limits on non-renewal notices from 45 to 70 days. There is no easy path forward, but by working together, we can lower risk and preserve and protect communities that have been in place for generations, Commissioner Lara says. As for the proposed new bill to require that insurance companies cover homes, provided communities and homeowners meet new fire hardening standards, Commissioner Lara concludes, we have to renew California. AB 2367, the Renew California Act, also has support from the California Professional Firefighters and California State Firefighters Associations, Consumer Attorneys of California, and the Consumer Federation of California. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Jonathan Getz, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, A.K. Jewel, Brian Bueco, Royalty Free Music, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.